Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We'll be talking about something that is just late-breaking news today. Two of the nation's top military leaders with the Joint Chiefs of Staff have announced that they intend to press for what will amount to a repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell provision that has been a part of the U.S. Armed Services ever since the presidency of William Jefferson Clinton. President Bill Clinton had announced, as he was a candidate for president back in 1992, that if elected, he would repeal the military's prohibition on openly gay persons serving in the military. That didn't happen, partly because of the intervention of who was then the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Colin Powell, and instead they came up with the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, and it has been a major goal of the gay rights movement ever since to get it repealed, and now it looks like it's moving in that direction. With the tacit approval of Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and apparently also with the backing of Defense Secretary Robert Gates, Congress is resuming the battle over this. And today it was announced that the Pentagon is going to conduct its own investigation and study of the situation. The nation's two top defense officials called for this kind of a study in order to get at whether or not they will repeal. This was announced just today by Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as he was speaking to the Senate Armed Services Committee. So we're going to be talking about this today. I want to invite you to join the conversation. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And I just want to know what you think about this. Is this a provision that's just outdated, kind of a national embarrassment? We should be rid of it? Or does the nation have a vested interest in maintaining a rule against openly homosexual persons serving in the armed services? My guess is that this conversation is a very different conversation that would have been held back in 1993. We're just a long way away from where we were, even in 1993, talking about this issue. That was 17 years ago. And let's talk about it right now. This is a very current issue. It's a very controversial issue. You can count on the fact that this purported study, and I'll just take them at their word, they're going to be studying the issue. It would not be announced if they weren't intending to move towards the repeal of this. There's a lot of pressure on the current administration and President Barack Obama to repeal this, but President Obama said he will not do it unilaterally. He will act through Congress and with Congress to get this done. So do you think it's a good idea, a bad idea, and why? What does this tell you about where we are in America in 2010? And is this a big deal or not? The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. There is so much in the news we need to talk about. I will be on ABC News World tonight, World News tonight, and Nightline tonight as scheduled to talk about the controversy in Haiti over evangelical ministries and missions. A lot going on there. And I got the call today. Was glad to have the conversation with the folks at ABC. That should be on tonight, World News tonight, with Diane Sawyer, and then on Nightline later tonight if their plans hold. And I was able to say some things that I won't preempt the show by saying now, but I'll simply say that evangelical missionaries and agents of evangelical ministries were there on the ground in Haiti before the earthquake came, and they will be there long after the Hollywood celebrities leave. And my hope is that this will be an opportunity for the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'll be very clear about that. As I told them, you know, that's how evangelicals got their name. We're the people who talk about the gospel wherever we go. And the love that we should show to others, and in this case, the least of these there in Haiti, ought to be understood as not only the beginning of our responsibility, but as that which we hope will be fulfilled as we have the chance to talk to them not only about their earthly needs, but about their eternal needs. No embarrassment there. There's no shame in that. That's our Christian responsibility, and we should not imply anything different to the watching world. We should be right up front about the fact that you bet we want to see persons come to faith in Christ. That's how we got our name. That's what makes evangelicals evangelical. Other issues in the news have to do with all kinds of things going on about marriage Scott James wrote an article for the New York Times that ought to have a lot of attention. It was published on January the 29th, so that's just a few days ago, and it's about how gay marriage or gay unions differ from heterosexual unions. Colleen Huff, the principal investigator of the study that was done here by San Francisco State University called the Gay Couples Study, shows that homosexual couples, homosexual male couples, tend to be what are characterized as open relationships. Very interesting. Colleen Huff, the study's principal investigator, said, with straight people, it's called affairs or cheating, but with gay people, it does not have such negative connotations. Now, if that was printed in a conservative magazine, or if that was said by someone who's well-known and identified as a Christian conservative, that would be called, by those observing it, as unfair. That would be a gross generalization, a mischaracterization. We're told that again and again. But this is not coming from just some kind of conservative source. This is coming from the New York Times. This is coming from a study conducted by San Francisco State University, known as the Gay Couple Study. Of course, there's more to the data than just this perhaps most controversial part. Let me read to you from Scott James' article in the New York Times. He writes, a study to be released next month is offering a rare glimpse inside gay relationships and reveals that monogamy is not a central feature for many. Some gay men and lesbians argue that as a result, they have stronger, longer-lasting, and more honest relationships. And while that may sound counterintuitive, some experts say boundary-challenging gay relationships represent an evolution in marriage, one that might point the way for the survival of the institution, end quote. Okay, folks, I love statements that get to the heart of the issue, and that one does. It's like an arrow right in the heart of the target. The adoption of same-sex marriage is not about extending marriage to new kinds of couples. It's about destroying marriage in terms of what it is and was meant to be. And we're talking here about monogamy being essential to marriage, and that means faithfulness, and that means that, as Colleen Huff, the investigator here, said, with straight people, it's called affairs or cheating. Yeah, exactly. But now you have some of these people saying that it's actually an improvement upon the institution of marriage to have an open relationship so that we no longer have to talk about adultery or affairs or cheating. And as the counterintuitive and rather pathetic logic of this particular argument goes, you actually protect the relationship by making it open. Of course, that means you supposedly protect marriage by destroying it. We'll be tracking this. You know, I have a feeling, this is just a hunch, I have a feeling those behind this study really weren't ready for the New York Times to release this 30 days before the report comes out, because it's kind of like letting the cat out of the bag. And in this case, a rather embarrassing cat for the supporters of same-sex marriage, especially when you consider the fact that both sides have rested in the federal district court trial there in California over the constitutionality of Proposition 8. Very interesting development. When that study's out, we'll get it. We'll be ready to talk about it. There's another study that is out, a landmark study reported by the Washington Post. Again, that's very important. That could have major implications for America's programs for sex education. It turns out that abstinence-focused programs just might work. Let me just tell you, here's a standalone one-sentence paragraph from the Washington Post. That in journalistic terms, is meant to get your attention. Okay, so do I have your attention? Here's the line. The findings are the first clear evidence that an abstinence program could work. Again, that's not coming from a Christian ministry. That's not coming from some kind of conservative think tank. That's coming in a paragraph from the Washington Post. So it's very interesting. Here you have two points of research that are lines of evidence that support conservative arguments supporting marriage and abstinence before marriage. And these points are appearing, of all things, counterintuitive in this day, they are appearing in the New York Times and the Washington Post. John B. Jamont III, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania who led the federally funded study, said, I think we've written off abstinence-only education without looking closely at the nature of the evidence. Our study shows this could be one approach that could be used, end quote. Now, folks, a very interesting thing to watch is how many people hate abstinence-based sex education. It's not just that they argue against it, saying it's not enough. It's not just that they argue against it, saying there could be better ways. You look at the hatred that is addressed toward the idea of sexual abstinence before marriage, and you'll see a great revelation about the moral confusion of our day. You know, I've debated this issue for so long now, well over 20 years. It started when I was in Georgia as a Christian journalist and newspaper editor, and it has continued to the present day. And I don't remember exactly at what point this realization came to me, but it came to me in a very clear way. A lot of folks oppose abstinence-based sex education because it implies very clearly that you ought not to have sex before marriage. Well, that's an argument that many people are going to fight with everything they have because they're very committed to not only their kids, but your kids being told it's just fine to have sex before marriage. You consider the radical position that's reflected there, and you'll understand what we're up against. We're going to come back to talk about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and how long it'll last. We'll be back on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy has been in place since 1993. And almost from the very beginning of the operation of that policy, there has been a push to have it repealed. Now, just to remind you of the history, there had been a very clear rule against openly homosexual persons serving in the military until 1993. Prior to the Clinton administration's negotiated policy that became known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it was a matter of routine military law and practice that if someone was discovered to be engaged in a homosexual relationship or homosexual acts, they were exiting the military. They were required to leave the military. And now, of course, the situation was shifted in 1993 to a policy that said, more or less, we won't ask if you don't tell. So only those who became very publicly known and by their self-declaration as homosexuals were excluded. Now, you have had the gay rights movement pressing for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell from the very beginning. I mean, after all, they thought they'd secured from candidate Bill Clinton as far back as 1992 the assurance that it would be taken off the table. This is now 17 years later, and it's still here. And now you have those who felt like they had that kind of assurance from candidate Barack Obama, who's now President Barack Obama. But President Obama has disappointed some of his supporters who expected him immediately to do this by executive order by saying that he will not do it that way. He will instead respond to the efforts of Congress to repeal the law, since Congress was involved back in 1993 when it was put into place. But now you have calls from within the military for it to be reconsidered. And in particular, the nation's top two defense officials announced today that there should be an end to the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, told the Senate Armed Services Committee, quote, "No matter how I look at the issue, I cannot escape being troubled by the fact that we have in place a policy which forces young men and women to lie about who they are in order to defend their fellow citizens," end quote. Now, I'm wondering if this entire debate has shifted a great deal from 1993 to the present. We're about to find out. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Shirley's on the line listening on WTLN. Go ahead, Shirley.
Good afternoon. First of all, let me thank you for your ministry and your service. We appreciate it very much. I am the mother of a military policeman in the U.S. Marine Corps. And correct me if I'm wrong, is my assumption accurate in that if they repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that will allow homosexuals to serve openly in the armed forces? Is that correct?
Shirley, that is the point of the repeal of the policy. It would end all discrimination against persons, regardless of their sexual behavior in terms of heterosexual or homosexual preference or their homosexual relationships within the U.S. military. So you've got it exactly right.
Okay. And my concern then is that the will of the president or the Joint Chiefs of Staff will definitely not be aligned with those that are presently, with the majority at least, of those that are presently serving in our armed forces, defending our country. And my concern is, do they even care? What's going to happen to those that are currently serving who disagree with this? And quite frankly, who knows how they might react?
Yeah. You know, it's a very interesting question. And Shirley, I do not have a poll, but those that have been taken in the past have shown a very clear concern to perpetuate the policy on the part of those who are wearing the American uniform. The majority of them have indicated that. The political pressure is not coming from within the military. That's clear. The political pressure is coming from outside the military, but it's coming in a very clear, a very, very persistent way. And this is just another reminder that those of us who want to defend marriage and want to be very clear about a biblical and faithful understanding of human sexuality, we're doing other things. This is not a full-time job. But the activists who are pressing for this, they've got organizations that work nonstop at this, and they've been working nonstop at this for a long time. A couple of things are coming together here, though, that I think are important for us to note. The first is we do have a new administration. There is virtually no chance this is going to happen under the administration of George W. Bush, and so the efforts were always directed by the gay rights organizations towards the next administration. And in this new administration, they have had a pledge to repeal this. The president, of course, dealt with this in a State of the Union address. And now you cannot see, I think, anything other than the Joint Chiefs of Staff responding in virtually a political way to what the president said in his State of the Union address. You know, Shirley, here is the issue. I really appreciate you calling, and God bless you as the mother of a serviceman. I just want to honor you and your son in this, and I honor the way that you want to speak on his behalf in this. You know, the bottom line in this is the question of whether or not there is any proper discrimination about employing persons in the military and deploying them in whatever military service is required on the basis of their sexual orientation. Now, I asked the question earlier if there had been a shift in this discussion, say, from 1993 when the policy was put into place until now. My guess is that a lot of Americans, and I'll be curious to see how this happens, not curious in just an intellectually curious way, curious in a very morally serious way. I'm going to be very, very interested to see where the American people come down on this issue, because I think a lot of Americans have lost the ability to frame and to make the argument as to why sexual behavior in this context would matter. And I think that's part of the confusion of our day. And when you consider how the policy against openly homosexual persons, how that policy was framed back in the early 1990s, it was about the cohesiveness of military units. It was about mixing a sexually charged situation, potentially, in a combat situation, in the close confines. The argument made about the military is that the military life is not a life in which individuals have choice about the persons with whom they're going to room, with whom they're going to share close personal space. And the argument the military had used to defend its policy was this is not like America writ large, where persons are making choices about where they're going to be and who they're going to shower with and all the rest. This is very different in the military, and that needs to be respected. Now, Shirley, I'll just tell you, and to all of you, I think that argument still pertains. I think that is still an important argument. And yet we are dealing with the confusion of a morally confused age in which we're also losing our ability to frame and to make arguments. This is not about whether or not someone wants to serve their country. I am thankful to everyone who wants to serve the country. I am. I'm going to admire everyone who wants to put on an American military uniform and serve the country in that way. But there are persons who cannot be well mixed into the environment of the military without grave danger to the cohesiveness of military units and all the rest. Folks, if you've been listening to this program, you know how concerned I am about women serving in combat situations, which is now becoming more and more routine if subverting military law in order to do so. But what we have in that situation is we have military commanders saying that we have a whole new problem with rape in American military context, on American military bases, in forward deployed units where men and women are together. We have a whole new problem with pregnancies. Well, you know what? We invited that problem when we started turning to women in combat situations and putting them forward deployed with men. Well, it is no accusation of some unusual sense against homosexual persons to say that they're attracted to persons of the same sex. That's what homosexuality is. The military context is then automatically in play there as a matter of our concern. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Don't ask, don't tell. In place since 1993. Will it be repealed? I'll tell you, all the political patterns and energies are pointing in that direction. When you've got the top two defense officials in military uniform in the United States arguing that it's time to repeal it, when you have the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff saying, I cannot escape being troubled by the fact that we have in place a policy which forces young men and women to lie about who they are in order to defend their fellow citizens. When you have the president of the United States indicating that it will be the goal of his administration to work with Congress to see the policy repealed, you can see where the energy is flowing. We're asking the question, on this program today, what do you think about the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell? Is it something you think that has just outworn its usefulness? There are those who are arguing that it's nothing more than an unjustified form of discrimination. Now, let me just tell you right up front, it is a form of discrimination. And all kinds of rules are a form of discrimination. Rules about how tall you have to be to be in a certain unit or how much strength you have to be, those are discriminatory, no doubt about it. Rules about age and how old you can be to do X or Y, that's discriminatory. But quite frankly, I don't think there are many 85-year-olds signing up to be Navy SEALs that are going to meet the physical requirements. And that's discrimination. But I don't think all of us, including the 85-year-old, agree that that's a reasonable form of discrimination. What's being alleged about Don't Ask, Don't Tell is that it's an unreasonable form of discrimination, an unjustifiable form of discrimination. And I think that's a wrong argument. And I think what that argument implies is that sexuality doesn't matter in a context of intimacy, of space, and just in terms of the kind of closeness and of living circumstances and work and life that occurs in a military context. To be clear, and this is where honesty is just absolutely essential. We understand that when heterosexuals are in play, when you put men and women together, there's the likelihood of heterosexual sexual attraction. And that complicates things. And thus, we have to have rules and principles about how that complication is to be minimized, if not avoided. Well, homosexual persons are, by definition, sexually attracted to persons of the same sex. Not like heterosexuals, it means all persons of the same gender, but at least some persons of the same gender. And if indeed in a heterosexual context, putting men and women together thus implies at least the likelihood of some sexual complications and involvement, and we have to minimize it, how much more so does the homosexual dimension of that question then cloud the picture of how the military is to operate in terms of unit cohesiveness and all the rest? You know, I'll tell you the truth. I think this will have a deleterious effect on the United States Armed Forces. I want to tell you right up front, I realize that to say that Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or the prohibition of openly gay persons serving in the military, I understand there are people who say that sounds so outdated, but I want to ask you very clearly, how operationally and in terms of principle would you actually try to administer a military without such a rule? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to New Albany, Indiana. Go ahead, Jeff, listening on WFIA.
Hello, Dr. Mueller. do you hear me?
Yeah, go right ahead, Jeff.
Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for your ministry. We love it.
Thank you.
And I want to tell Shirley thank you for your sacrifice for your son's service. I've served as a Marine for almost 14 years, and starting from 1977, I continue to serve our military today just for a short while longer, but I've loved every minute of it. So I've seen this transitional process over the 30 years or so, and it's been very interesting. And Dr. Mueller, I love the way the Lord confirms things. You just, the last few minutes you spoke was really what I was going to talk about, was how this does affect the good order of discipline of the military, and the reason that the Don't Ask, Don't Tell deposit was put into place was some wise people understood that, and now, of course, they're trying to break that down. And I hope and pray that they're not able to break that down, because the point you were just bringing up, you could get into a much deeper discussion on that, and quite frankly, a much more graphic discussion. But it's all interrelational, it's all interpersonal relationships that people don't really understand about the military, and yeah. You were touching on them.
Jeff, I appreciate your call and appreciate your service as well. When you look at this, you realize that just quick political promises are not adequate to deal with such a significant and complex military situation. The reality is, this is no small thing for the U.S. military and thus for the United States as a society. The armed services are a reflection of the society at large. That, by the way, is why those pressing for the full integration of homosexuals into every dimension of the armed services know that once that's done, it's a big step towards the absolute normalization of homosexual behavior and orientation everywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The issue of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is now front and center in the American public discussion because the chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff has put it there. Admiral Mike Mullen making a statement to the Senate Armed Services Committee today, not only calling for a study that was announced several months ago by the armed services, but now openly calling for a repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. Now, the issue for us in this conversation is intelligent Christian talk. Considering this from a Christian worldview, understanding with all of its implications, we need to admit certain things up front. We need to admit that there are wrongful forms of discrimination. There are. And we, as a part of our Christian responsibility, need to identify those wrongful bases, inappropriate, unjust bases for any kind of discrimination. But at the same time, we have to support those principles of discrimination that are just and right and necessary. And the question when it comes to the don't ask, don't tell policy is on which side of that divide the policy falls. And I clearly believe it falls in the necessary discrimination, the rightful discrimination rather than wrongful discrimination. Let me tell you what I'm frustrated by. I'm frustrated by people who say there should be no discrimination. That is the statement of a moral imbecile. It sounds so good until you realize that means you don't discriminate between hiring a child abuser or not a child abuser to be your babysitter. Okay? You discriminate rightly. That is, in fact, it is insane not to discriminate on that basis. Discrimination is not wrong. That's why you speak of persons with certain abilities having a discriminating taste. That's not an insult. They know on what basis to discriminate between the good, the better, and the best. And we need to understand that that word discrimination has a very bad taste in the mouth to some people because in a fallen world, there have been all kinds of sinful, wrongful, unjust, inexcusable forms of discrimination, such as racial discrimination. But when it comes to sexuality, sexual orientation, and sexual behavior, I'm going to argue that suggesting that that's not a necessary and appropriate basis for discrimination is a recipe for nothing less than total social disaster. But that's the same argument that I have to make when it comes to anything from same-sex marriage to, of course, now the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy and its possible repeal. Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Al's listening on WTLN. Go ahead, Al.
Hi, Dr. Baller. I served in the military for 20 years and I was in the Army. And I went out just before the policy that Bill Clinton put into place. And I know from being a servant leader that you don't need any more problems on your hands. You have enough problems with just the day-to-day troops, and to have an additional problem like this is not going to work. It does deteriorate the well-discipline that you need to get things done in the military. And my cousin used to serve in the Navy, and being locked up on a carrier at 6 months at a time at sea would be just a heightened a problem.
Yeah,
this is not going to be would not work for leaders in the military. I don't care what anybody would say, and the military should not be used as a social experiment.
You know, I think that's a very important point, Al, because that's exactly what the military would become under the context of the repeal of this rule. It would become a great social experiment. And you mentioned an aircraft carrier. Just imagine a nuclear submarine under the surface in very close confines for a very long time. And there are people who would say, well, that's just homophobia to be concerned about that. Well, it's not, because I would argue you put men and women together on a sub of persons who are predominantly heterosexual, and you're going to have the same issues. You know, we just need to understand that the sexual attraction of human beings to each other is a very powerful thing. And the question is, how do you handle it? Will and Ariel Durant, the well-known historians of Western civilization, said as they were surveying civilization that one of the issues that is required for any society to survive is that it must, and I'm paraphrasing their words here, create a bank to hold in check the liquid passions of human sexuality. In other words, human sexuality is like a river trying to break out of its banks at all times. And you have to be very clear, this is appropriate, that's inappropriate. And of course, marriage is the central institution for normalizing an expectation for society. And of course, when you come to something like the military, you're in a situation in which it's not just about persons freely associating with each other. It's not about persons deciding where they're going to go, with whom they're going to live, and how they're going to be deployed together. It means a situation in which persons have surrendered a certain amount of their autonomy, and they're placed under the supervision and at the deployment will of military authorities. And you put people into a context under that situation, and you add the element of what would now be perceived and expected sexual attraction. And you got a big issue, a huge issue. Let me just ask you a simple question. If indeed it is appropriate to segregate men and women in terms of living situations and hygiene situations, you know, everything from showers and all the rest in the military, and to have rules that are different because of the presence of women than would be necessary if it was just men, then how can you say, if you understand that there's a difference there, how can you understand then that it makes no difference to suggest that a homosexual orientation would make no impact whatsoever? That just doesn't make any sense. And that is no slander to homosexual persons. Because, again, you put heterosexual persons in the same situation, you would expect the same complication. And I don't think that's sane for a military in terms of its operational policies. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Chris is on the line, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Chris.
Thank you, Dr. Mueller. I appreciate you having me on. The unit cohesion argument has been tried for decades. It started with blacks in World War II. They said unit cohesion would go down. They got into the Army. Our Army became stronger. It happened with women. We have women on aircraft carriers right now. Our Army is stronger. It is not less strong. And if you want a modern-day example, look at the state of Israel that has one of the best fighting armies in the world. And they have gays fighting right next to straight people. And their argument is, who cares? If you can lift a gun, if you can fight and defend your country, that's all we care about. We are losing millions and millions of dollars training people. We're losing invaluable talent, including translators who speak Arabic, and we're firing them when we're fighting people who speak Arabic. It's ridiculous. We need these people in the military to do their job. If they're willing to fight, I'm willing to back them.
Chris, I do appreciate your call, and I especially appreciate the very articulate and careful way you made the argument. And if I were going to argue your position, I think I'd want to make the argument just the way you did it, which I think raises a host of other issues. If you can hang with me, Chris. We'll be right back for some final thoughts on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I appreciated Chris' call. Chris made the argument, as I said, if I were in agreement with his proposal concerning the appropriate policy, I think I'd make the argument just that way. And I want to come back. Time is fleeting. I do not have the time, I regret, Chris, to continue this conversation. I hope you'll call me back. Unfortunately, we're just running out of time. But let me tell you, I do believe that the don't ask, don't tell policy might not be the best policy. And I think there might be a better policy. And you say, and I've heard reports of the same, that there are persons who are being terminated from the military in terms of being translators of Arabic because they are homosexual. I think that raises the question in a way that almost all persons could understand, that that there might be different kind of context, different kind of roles in the military. It might not be just one thing. But, Chris, I have to tell you, even with the Israeli argument, I don't think it has worked particularly well there in terms of integrating women into all fighting forces. And you used the issue of women on aircraft carriers. I know that has not been unproblematic. And I'll just come right out and say I think that's been a negative development. And so when it comes to unit cohesiveness, I'll understand that there could be some examples that could be drawn from many different places, especially from smaller nations with different kinds of societies. But I do not think that Americans are going to feel, by and large, that it's the appropriate way to organize the military to suggest that that kind of sexual issue put into a same-sex military unit is not going to have deleterious effects. And I think this conversation is going to go on. And, Chris, as we discuss it more, I hope you'll call me back when we can engage in a little more dialogue here. But I will tell you this. This is a live issue before this country. We're going to be hearing a lot from the American people. I go back to the fact that it goes to the question of what is appropriate and inappropriate in terms of principles of discrimination. We should always be ready to revisit and reconsider those issues. But I'll tell you, when it comes to making the argument for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I'd be willing to take a look at what might be better, but just repealing it and saying that sexual orientation doesn't matter in a military context, that doesn't make any sense to me, and I do not believe it would make sense to the majority of the American people. And we're hearing, by and large, it doesn't make sense to the majority of those who are in uniform. Folks, this is just another reminder that when it comes to these issues, there's a whole lot at stake. It's never just about this or just about that. This is not just about the military. This is about American society writ large. And it's about this vast experiment America has thrown itself into of transforming a sexual morality from beginning to end. I have grave concerns about that, and of that you're not surprised. This is a place for intelligent Christian conversation. We'll be back to talk about this again on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.